12. Coming up in just a minute, we've got G. Allen Taylor, who'll be joining the program with lots to talk about, some of the all-season business, some of the things happening in the way of player acquisition, and yes, some more about Jaden Rashada. We will talk about it. Brendan's with me here tonight. He's been tracking the story all day with his staffers, and we'll tell you what we know and what we're working on. And then we've got Graham Hall, the guy who was, Graham Hall, the Minister of Information. Let's tell
him. He's on tonight?
He is.
He's always on when I'm on.
Let's do this.
He's always on. I'm excited.
It's time again for Buddy Martin. Call him up and tell him what you're thinking. But be kind because he's doing the best he can.
Better. Stronger. Faster.
Mama says that alligators are ornery because they got all them teeth but no toothbrush.
Hey, what if the voice calls while you're gone?
Take a message.
Bye.
You ready, champ?
I'm ready for this my whole life.
I'm incapable of small talk. But that's why you love me, right?
Kind of intimidating to be in the presence of so many great athletes.
Hopefully we're good to go, folks. Glad to be with you tonight. Dilly Dilly, good evening to you.
Dilly Dilly.
Yeah, that's one we haven't heard in a long time.
I haven't said that in a while.
Yeah.
It's a happy feeling to say that.
It is.
Your headphones don't work, do they?
Not real good, but thanks, sir. We just seem to be working it out, folks, and thank you very much for being along with us tonight.
Don't force quit.
I'm not.
Just kidding. Just
kidding. All right, so Brendan's here causing trouble like always. He has been working today. He has been working today, although I wish he was out working somewhere right now. But anyway, we've got the story we're working on, which I know a lot of you are tired of, but we're going to talk about it tonight a little bit. And then I'll say good evening to all our folks here. Thanks for joining the show.
Dilly Dilly.
All right. That's Dan Bond is here. Dan out in Texas. Glad to see you. Becky Smith Carlisle sometimes is leader in the clubhouse. Eric Newton. Becky is quite often not tonight. Eric Newton. What's up, Eric?
Okay.
Robert Turner, who's been regular here.
Have you seen
David Baldo, one of our regulars.
Have you seen my phone charger?
Nice, nice.
Thank you.
David Hunter. Yeah, happy Monday to you, David. And let's see who else we got here before we go. Dan Bond, we talked to earlier.
Why don't you put up their stuff on the deal?
Because they're just saying good evening. We don't do that till they say something.
I see a lot of rules got, since I've left.
If you got some things to say, folks, we'll get you up there. I'm going to put you on once you participate. One day we'll be able to talk live on this show.
Nope, never.
Yeah, we will. So just yep. Anyway. So let's go right to the hotline. As a matter of fact, he's there already.
Who?
Before I even play the commercial, my man, he's one of my favorite guests. He's a guy that knows his stuff. He's an excellent writer and reporter. We're a combination of two. And the G. Allen Taylor looking like he lost some weight and looking good. What's up, Allen? Brendan, why are we not here today?
Oh, thank you. Throw it right on me.
All right, so here we are. We're off to a good start.
Always make it my fault.
We normally get Allen fine, whatever. It's just me and him. But
I have to do this really fast. Your thing's already.
I thought we were past this in the fourth year of ECAM, but I guess we're not.
Hold on one second. Yeah. We're getting there. All right. So we tried that. You plugged your little guys in there.
Yeah, that's not it. He's talking. We're just not hearing.
All right. Last thing. Well, I promise. I think this will work. Hold on. Hold on, everybody.
Sorry, Allen.
I haven't been around. We're going to get there.
It's a cheap show, and we don't have many good people.
You're a cheap show. We can't be talking like that. All right, so here we go. We got, and they, you know, they did all their new.
I know it well, my friend.
Hold on, everybody.
All right.
Here's our sound. Here's the sound.
Yeah, where is it?
How about
right here? Mm-hmm. Maybe this is, but output would be these guys. Oh! Can you hear anything now?
No, Brendan, I cannot.
Oh, no, push it on this one. This one. Well, do it. Here, go up here again.
Mm-hmm. It's probably turned down. It's this one. More likely.
Right here.
Let's try him now. I bet you we got him. Alan!
Yeah. There you go.
Yes, sir.
Volume!
It's called volume. A volume button. That would do it.
My work is done here.
Such genius, man. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, brother. Yourself?
Hassle tonight with stuff like this. Trying to figure out something on this Rashada story. I know you wrote about it. I actually got some people to talk today, but nothing that's ready for prime time. And really kind of halfway happy that football is sort of over and kind of sad. Give me about 3 weeks and I'll be jonesing for it. You know what I mean? How was your first footballist weekend?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Took some mandatory PTO because, you know, you get to a point where you got 2 or 3 months backlog. You got to take it or lose it. Mm-hmm. So did that, recharged, watched the Gators basketball team a little bit as they try to get on the right side of the bubble. So doing all right, man. Doing all
good.
Right.
Now, I'm going to make one more adjustment. Don't go away if we lose you. We're going to get right back to you. So I love having Alan on because he has perception and context, and he knows the game of, and there's all sports, but particularly football. And he's I don't know how you get all your details, but man, you know how to report a story. I got to tell you. Who is your mentor?
Man, I worked so many jobs coming out of college, you know, a year here, 2 years there. There's just, I hate to say that, but there's so many different ones, right? And people that I didn't even realize at the time, maybe that were helping me.
Name some names, man.
Oh, man. There were a couple people at the University of Alabama, but I was already working since, you know, in journalism before then. Buford Boone, Jim Boone, out of Tuscaloosa. And suddenly, not necessarily journalism mentors, but just hard working people.
Yeah.
You know, a guy like Dale Miller up in West Virginia who came in there and built a radio network and his own news network because the AP prices were so exorbitant that he said, well, let's just hire 10 or 12 people to cover the state. And that guy got to it. So Dale's a big one, too, later in life for me.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the mentors come in all sizes and shapes. You never know where you're at. I had some people out of journalism who taught me a lot as well. Well, let's get started on. Well, let me go to some stuff you talked about here. Let's see. Well, I think my notes have been trashed by my son here somewhere.
I didn't do it.
It's always him.
You should see your notes on the
floor. Bottom line is, I want to know is, is I saw your piece on Mertz. You did some good analysis. You talked about his less than glorious days at Wisconsin, but you seem like you held out a little hope with this guy. And I think if you got a bunch of Gator fans in a bar and they had a little truth serum, they say, how come we didn't go after a first-rate quarterback? Now, I know they did. I know things happen, like, you know, kid had his deal. I know that, obviously, the Rashada thing blew up in smoke and what have you. And, of course, AR-15. Although, Anthony Richardson, I don't know if he ever leveled with us or not about what they was leaving. That doesn't matter. But so here they are holding a bag and trying out a guy. And Billy likes to say, well, he started 32 games, whatever. That's fine. He's probably a pretty good pedestrian quarterback. But now he's the guy. It feels like maybe he could have done a little more. I don't know. He said in your piece you just wrote, they looked at 24 quarterbacks, right?
Sure. And some of those were in the portal. Some of those were just, you know, you back channel and you talk to people who know. And I think, you know, long before Sam Hartman at Wake Forest got in the portal, multiple schools had feelers out and talking to his camp to see what was going to happen. And certainly I think Florida was one of those. And then he winds up going to Notre Dame where, as you know, he wanted to be paired with Tommy Rees. And now he's at Alabama as OC is at Notre Dame. I think they evaluated numerous guys that they wanted. And I don't think, you know, Mertz was at the bottom of the list, but I also don't think he was in the top 3 or 4. But then you play the consolation prize game, and if you had to go to your fourth or your fifth choice, you know, getting a guy who has 3 years starting experience in the Big Ten and was a top 60 recruit coming out of high school is not bad for that position. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some things, and I keep using the word operationally, but that's a big part of quarterbacking, right?
It is.
I think he can make the checks. I think he's got really good arm talent, and it all boils down to whether he improves as a decision maker and how he adjusts to the people around him. Florida's going to be a run-first offense. Wisconsin was a run-first offense. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean they're similar, because Wisconsin didn't do a lot of play action, didn't maybe take advantage of what the run game could do. And they also, even with Florida, by Florida standards, having very mediocre receivers, or at least young receivers coming in this year, I think he'll still have better skill people around him than he did at Wisconsin. And for a rarity, probably a better offensive line, because Wisconsin's offensive lines of the recent years weren't what we've come to expect from those guys. Yeah. So that's just a few boxes to check to tell you it's not hopeless.
Right.
This guy coming in, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out what Billy's trying to do. He wants to run the football. I mean, that's why he's got these large human beings he brought in. And they got some beef. Or they got some guys. And they got some dudes up front. Big, tall, long guys who have a, you know, I forget the exact weight and girth, whether they're 340 average and whatever. And all 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", some 6'8". Obviously, he wants to dominate the trenches. Now, he did lose some pretty good offensive linemen, I thought. And first, what was your take about those offensive linemen that left? Do you think they needed to? Do you think they were invited to? And secondly, what do you think Billy's building?
I think Ethan White was probably a guy that they wanted, obviously, to retain, because he's had, you know, 2+ years as a starter. And he played pretty well at left guard. Certainly, I think they would have welcomed Tarquin back as well, even though, given the guys they brought in, he might be the third best tackle in that group. But, you know, I think we were all worried about what he would do last year. And when he was healthy, he actually played pretty well in his first sort of extended role. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the deal he got at USC was really sweet. And it just shows you that, you know, the value that you perceive in-house when these guys shop around, they might find something better other places. So USC is happy to get both of those guys. I think both of them would have been welcome back, just at least for depth purposes, at Florida. So Florida sort of starting from scratch with the starting five, and we'll see how quickly Sales and Stapleton can get those guys playing as one.
Yeah. We got a question from Robert Turner. It says, Mertz still has to beat out Miller. Can he?
Yeah, I don't think it's a situation where, hands down, Mertz is brought in with no competition and handed the starting job. Billy doesn't operate that way. I don't think it's a situation like even where at Oregon last year, you know, they brought in Nix from Auburn and acted like it was a quarterback competition up until the end. I think this is going to be a legitimate one. I also think that Mertz has 31 starts more than Miller. And you know, I think he's a little bit better option, although as a backup, again, if Miller can get back to where he was last offseason, where the staff was really impressed with him behind Anthony, then at least you got a couple good options there. You're not stuck with it being Mertz and no one else.
Is the running game in good hands for the guys they got?
Yeah, you'd like another one for depth, but, you know, when you've got a pretty highly touted freshman coming in, competing with a super senior as a at the third spot behind Etienne and Montrell Johnson, then I think that's pretty good. That's you know, you might not have a first round draft choice in that bunch, but you got several potential future pros. And I think we saw Etienne, especially after contact and making guys miss at the line of scrimmage last year, that he's a player, and Johnson's really tough as well. We'll have to see what Webb delivers and the Tulane kid, but you didn't want to go into the season with just three scholarship running backs, so four is more palatable and five would be ideal.
Yeah. All right, so let's get down to the story that's wearing us out, but it's still a story, so you got to deal with it. You've written a little bit, and a couple of your colleagues Today wrote about it on The Athletic, Feldman and Andy Staples. And it's, we're trying to find out what happened in the Jaden Rashada situation. We still don't know. We're all trying to report it from various and sundry places. We've had difficulty getting anybody to talk. We did get a couple people who agreed to talk off the record, or at least talk anonymously. It didn't tell us a whole lot. But from where you sit on this whole thing, and I'm not going to ask you to solve it because it's too big for just a five-minute conversation. But to me, it appears as though there was a lot of blame to go around. Seems like a lot of people had their hands in the cookie jars. And really with no guidelines on something that's so brand new like it is NIL, and really no one to know who's in charge, it's no wonder it went up in flames. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think some of this to some degree might have happened at other places, but they managed to keep it in-house or get it rectified before it went public. I don't think the $13.8 million was offered somewhere else. So that's what makes this case exceptional.
Right.
And clearly someone, you know, someone on the both the Gator Collective side and the agent side just engaged in some promises that couldn't be kept. And, you know, the contract had an out clause that allowed it to be terminated. So that part, I think, doesn't lend itself to litigation. However, if you entered into a contract knowing full well you couldn't deliver on the back end, we'll see if there's some sort of potential fraud exposure there. That's, you know, I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but when you look at things that might be actionable in a court of law, that would seem to be one that, that might give the Rashada some hope. If they even go down that road, they might be now moving on and understanding the reality of what that situation was and what his future is at Arizona State, and it might not come to pass. You know, the thing for Florida football fans now is looking forward, sort of seeing if there were any NCAA rules broken on this. Certainly that contract at the time seemed like an inducement, a pay-to-play, and that's a no-brainer NCAA violation. But if Napier and Sicklin and people in the bid weren't aware of it, then it becomes less so. And Billy, you know, last week said he doesn't anticipate any NCAA action coming off of that, but we'll see going forward if that's true. Just a mess. I think at his heart, Jaden Rashada wanted to be at Florida. Not that Arizona State or some of these other places would have been a bad fallback, but clearly there were some financial works that really muddied the decision-making process, and I'm not sure that was all coming from Jaden. But you know, ultimately, he's responsible for signing things. He's responsible for making decisions and picking somewhere to play. So, and he's 19, so let's not absolve him of everything. But obviously, I think he got some advice from the agent side, obviously.
Yeah, and then poor Billy got kind of stuck with it on a press conference where the first six questions were about Rashada, and he couldn't say anything. But I say don't put him up there in a situation like that. If you want to put somebody up there for 3 minutes, say, I know you want to talk about Rashada. I want to tell you it's in litigation. We can't talk about it tonight. I can't answer any questions. Having said that, here's Coach Napier on talk about whatever. I mean, I don't know that. I mean, just having saying basically no comment to six guys, they're not going to go away. The guys that we're talking about, they're going to be back and back and back. They're like bulldogs. They're like, not the Georgia kind, but you know what I'm talking about. They're going to keep, they're tenacious. And so my take on it is, there's a left lame to go around. It did not look good. It was not good for Florida, whatever. There is one spokesperson on the side of the negotiation of the 13.8 who said, look, the deal was brought to us by Florida. What are we supposed to do? Turn them down? We're trying to get people signed from a Gator Collective standpoint, you know. And everybody has an excuse, a reason, whatever. But as you know, and I hate to be a moralist here, when there are large sums of money involved, there's always something untoward going on, somebody playing sleight of hand, whatever. We still don't know the real story about, did Ruiz give him $125,000? A spokesperson told me that he did, but he can't prove that. And so what about that's pay to play if he got that before he ever enrolled. And then, of course, what happened in Florida, how'd they get to the number to we talked about this last time you were on, how to get that number to 13. Well, that wasn't a real number. And as we all know, that incorporated what Miami was, I guess. So it's just a screwed up mess. I'm not doing a very good job of explaining it. I'm ready to move on from it, but it will be a black eye for the university for a long time.
Yeah, Napier says it hasn't cost them any recruits yet and hasn't affected them. We'll see when the next class comes out, and this thing is going to remain unregulated for at least one more cycle, and it might be several more recruiting cycles before people put up guardrails as to whether that's the case. It certainly is a PR hit. Certainly there's going to have to be some reshuffling in how the two or three at this point collectives involved with Florida sports are organized and possibly even unified or rebranded. And that, again, there's still the chance of culpability legally, and I don't think anyone is overlooking that. And that's one of the reasons, more than any, this NCAA gobbledygook about not talking about a recruit who might be going somewhere else. I think Billy's reluctance to talk last week about that was more litigation based than not being able to speak on Rashada, who I think was about to sign the next day. And that's actually probably smart on his side, but he's a head coach, he's the face, he's the CEO, and he hadn't been public about his highest recruit bugging out until, since December 21st, when he told us they had a great connection and things were going well. We now know, and we knew at the time, really, that things weren't going swimmingly, or else the press conference on signing day, December 21st, wouldn't have been delayed over an hour as they tried to squeeze Rashada in on that day. So there's a few gaps to be filled in about what exactly transpired that kept him in the fold initially when that $13 million deal had been reneged upon or terminated. It's probably a better word. But obviously, I think Florida wants it to go away, wants to going on spring practice and get DJ Lagway in here for the 2020 class, because he's really a guy who will better galvanize recruits and be more of a magnet for people to come aboard than Rashada was, simply because Rashada was committed late in the game and he just doesn't have the pull, quite frankly, that Lagway would probably have. So ultimately, if you're looking for a reason why this might not ding Florida long term, and you believe that Lagway is a better long-term prospect, and really Rashada was only going to have a year backing up Mertz and then maybe a year when Lagway was here as a true freshman to prove himself. And, we could have very well been sitting here in 2 years with Rashada transferring out, never having started a game anyway, if Lagway isn't better.
Someone who's close to the situation over at Gator Collective said they knew the contract couldn't be executed early on. And they were told by someone at UF, we'll work it out, we'll work it out. The person I talked to said, I just hate the lies, including the fact that Ruiz paid him $125,000 to play. That's one person's view. I can't prove any of this. There's lots of questions about whether there was a $5,000 signing bonus. My source said it never was executed, etc. I don't know this to be true. And so here we are, still looking for answers, but it's not a very pretty sign. All right, let's get on to the final conversation here about the Super Bowl. All right, I know you don't cover it, but I kind of like those prop bets. You ever look at those prop bets?
They're fun, right? Especially when you start trying to figure out who's going to have catches, who's going to get yardage, and it gives you a game with it, right?
Exactly. So we'll talk about those in a second, but I want to get to your question on Kevin Steele as being the guy that Nick Saban picks. Surprised as a defensive coordinator?
Yeah, I am, but Steele's a safe pick. They've worked together twice previously, had some success together. So I understand where, I think some Alabama fans might have thought that Saban might bring a Jim Leonard or someone who he hasn't worked with before, but that doesn't always go well. Everybody can't work for Nick Saban. That's just the flat-out truth. There are people who respect him, who think he's a terrific coach and who would never, ever work for him again.
Yeah.
So at least now he's going back to a coach who's been in his system, who understands what's desired, and, you know, certainly still left Auburn with some egg on his face, or maybe it was more on the boosters' faces, and that was a weird situation, and that tethered to Tennessee and everything else. But that feels like a safer pick. I think on the offensive side with Reese is a little bit, again, not splashed because he was undergoing some criticism at Notre Dame, but good Lord, fans and coordinators, man, it's just take a breath. There's so many decisions made on the field based on personnel that for us to evaluate any coordinator without a 3 to 4 to 5 year snapshot of recruiting and productivity is tough. And so I think people in the business really respect Tommy. And I think that one is a, from a public standpoint, a little more of a gamble, but if you know, if Reese is all ball and all into it and really willing to work his tail off, then it could pay dividends. Because I wasn't sure what was going to happen after Sark left Alabama. You know, I didn't realize that would go the way it did. And they actually put up top six offenses both years, and the fans couldn't stand it. A little bit of a spoil factor going on there, too.
Yeah, and you just, you know, Nick Saban's not going to have problems getting resumes, although he did get turned down by the guy in Washington, Grubb. That was a surprise, and everybody, I think. All right, so here's your question going out. All right, here's your prop question. Super Bowl 57, what color Gatorade will be poured on the winning coach?
Well, as far as I know, and I'm no Gatorade expert, I know you don't have all the colors that are in the public aisle, but typically it's either orange or the lemon lime, right?
Nah. You think you never see grape or anything. It's usually lime or what are you going with?
I'm gonna go with the I hate to say the urine color. What are we gonna say? Yellow?
Yeah, that would work better, I think. Yeah, let's go with the yellow. All right. You're down for the big bet. Alan's going with yellow. I won't even ask you who's gonna win the game. Just pick the color of Gatorade. See how easy this show is, man? It's always great to have you on, Alan. Thank you very much. Be well, my friend. All right, G. Allen Taylor, bring it tonight like he always is. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Alan. All right, so coming up, we're going to hear from we'll play this spot from our friends over at Coach Melvin's place, and then we've got the Minister of Information standing by here. So. Time to catch up with our friend Jeffrey Melton, who's always got his shirt tail in the wind doing stuff, and meanwhile, celebrating milestones. Jeffrey, first of all, hello and welcome back, and congratulations. You've got a big milestone coming up for your scholar-athlete program, 25 years.
Yes, buddy, we're really excited. We started in 1997 with Larry Vitell, who had the Sports Scene show. And after a couple of years, TV20 called us, and we joined up with them and got even greater exposure. And we've now given away over 650 scholarships to local scholar athletes in Marion County, Alachua County, and all the adjoining counties.
I know you're proud of that. And by the way, I remember Larry Vitell. We worked together for a number of years. I guess he's up in New York now. Let's talk about what you're doing with Meldon Law. I want to remind people that they do practice law at Meldon Law, because sometimes you have so many things going on, whether you're trying out for the band or you're doing the Dancing with the Stars or whatever, we forget to tell them you are in business and you do practice law. Let's get that straight. And I got a number here, which I know is good from Ocala, and presumably Ocala, Gainesville, 352-69-5700. Let's talk about the fact that you are litigators as well.
Yes. I show up every morning at the office, by the way, and I have my desk, full of stuff, and I walk around the office and collaborate with all the attorneys and folks here. So we've really grown, buddy. It's a great story because we've grown from 12 people on our team to 32 people. in a period of 6 years. So we're very proud of that. And we're most proud of the team members that we have, just like any sports team. And, you know, your listeners are to a great extent working in businesses, and they know what it's like building a team in the office.
They do. Mel, we're going to start calling you Coach Melton. That would fit it really good. And your assistant, your assistant head coach, Kerry. All right, thanks very much, Jeffrey Melton. Melton Law, they won't back down for you. Expect any moment to hear from Graham Hall, hopefully. Let me make sure and get him, and respect Fran Spirit to tee it up. How you doing tonight, folks? We'll take some of your comments and questions as well. Always love hearing from you. I don't think Brendan's back there anymore. He was here earlier, but I think
right he's here.
Come on in.
What do you want from me?
Okay, so Graham is not going to be able to do it. Okay, so Graham is not able to do it. So come on in, Brendan. We're just Graham had to cancel. He has baseball practice, and we'll be getting Franz here shortly. So, yeah, let's talk about whatever you want to talk about.
I'm missing my briefcase.
Well, it was in the car. I saw it earlier today. So,
well, I don't know. I've been working too hard.
Yeah, you have. You've been working hard on the story. Let's talk about our guys working on the story. We're proud of some of them. We have some really talented young guys.
People.
Yeah, good people. And
yeah.
Yeah.
You read your messages. You got anything
to drink? This is because this is my guest supposed to be on. He bailed on me.
Whatever, Graham. It's cool. Get your stuff done. Yeah, everyone wants to keep, you know, whatever. What are you, I'm sure everyone's talking about the story that's came out.
Not really. Not too much conversation about it. Alan and I talked about it a little bit. But like everybody else, we just don't know the answers. There's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But you've got some information, and you were able to... you know, there's Sammy. He might be able to tell you something about it. I'm waiting for Franz.
You got to ask me more specifics.
All right. So what are you hearing that happened to Gator Collective and why the deal fell through? I've got a few notes here from my source, who's more close to the situation at Gator Collective. All right. It says, what am I supposed to do? Not trust Florida? They brought the deal to me. This is
the first I'm hearing this.
Yeah.
That's Francis.
Yeah, there's Francis. We'll bring him up, too. But so this is these are my notes from my source, and we'll bring Franz in. He said he talked about Darren Heitner, you know, basically.
He did?
Yeah, this guy talked about Darren Heitner and Marcus Walker and bringing the deal to him,
right,
to them at Gator Collective,
right,
and him saying, what am I supposed to do? And he says he didn't think the money was there. And he said that he was told by the people at UF, we'll work it out. Now, that's his story.
Okay.
So you just jump in. We'll bring Franz aboard. You tell me what you're hearing. Because we're trying to get people to talk, and they are. But they're only talking about, you know, things that are basic, and they won't tell the truth. But I know there was one person who said, I'm ready for it to be over. He points to Ruiz as the bad guy, what have you. And so what have you heard you can talk about and say good evening to Franz?
Hi, Franz.
Hi, Francis.
Hey, Brendan.
Did you take my briefcase?
Well, let's start at the very beginning of this. John Ruiz, you know, people can say he's the bad guy and all this. I'm not saying he's the, you know, John Ruiz had nothing to do with Florida except for the fact that he offered Jaden Rashada $9.8 million, which was far more than the going market would call for, but it was more than what Tennessee gave Nico, whatever his last name is. And so John Ruiz wanted to make a bigger splash than Tennessee. So he offered more money than that, but he couldn't deliver, which is why the Rashadas were shopping at Florida. Wouldn't have happened. The people at the Gator Collective, I got to tell you what, I'm not saying everybody there was wrong, but I can tell you this much. Eddie Rojas, I don't care what Eddie Rojas has said, I know better. Eddie Rojas.
Here's what he said right here. Here's what he said right here. It's everything great about Gator Nation. That's what he just posted here.
In the chat room.
In the chat room.
We are on YouTube and Twitter and all over the place tonight, just so you know. Yeah. Here, let me see that.
I know Eddie Rojas, had his hand in this. I know that Darren Heitner had his hand in this. I know that Hugh Hathcock had his hand in this. I know that Marcus Castro Walker had his hand in this. There's a lot of hands in this pie. Too many of them. I also know that Gary Condren tried to save the deal. And he is he tried to save it by offering far less than that, and couldn't do it. By the time that Gary Condren got into it, you had more fingers in the pie, which are the two amateurs from SMU who suddenly were representing the Rashadas, one of whom is still in school, in law school there, and the other one is a real estate agent. And they claim to be agents. So you have, this is what happened in this case. And I'm going to tell you what, I know for a fact that in the next 7 days, there's going to be more stuff coming out, and there's going to be a whole lot of embarrassed people. A whole lot of them.
Well, who's going to be doing the talking? Who's doing the talking is what I want to know. We've gotten a couple of statements from people today off the record about things, and everybody's got a little different story.
Yeah.
Right, Brendan?
Yeah, this is how it works, right? So we all have, these collaborations, and I think we're all just trying to get to the truth of the whole thing because, we're all in this very weird morphing system, and that's my biggest lesson I have had thus far is that it's a case of old infrastructure and new infrastructure kind of coming into place because, maybe or yes or no that we knew that maybe your things like financially could help a big player out, back in the day, before the NIL, that was, a different system. So I think, there's a big change in this process. The collective is a part of that. And I think right now what we're learning is what's everyone's record, right? Because it's really put up or show up time. There's a lot of things out there as far as, could be. And some of them point to Rashada being totally innocent of it. Another point, to him being a sort of a drama, person, or I don't want to say drama queen, but, you certainly hear the rainbow of different stories. So, it's hard to land on one, I think, today. I think what we've read so far, Saturday Down South, had their article, as well as obviously the Athletics article, which was been all the talk. I think all we've heard is just much of the same. We just timelined sort of, where we are right now in the process. And I don't think we all want to be in the process.
Go ahead.
Everybody's skimming the surface.
Yeah.
Nobody's
that's right. No, yeah, it's
in the bolts of it. Nobody's gotten down to the fact
that nobody really knows.
Here's the number one reality. Here's the number one reality you got to start with, and that is the fact that if Jaden Rashada really and truly wanted to be a Florida Gator, he would be one right now. Period. Because he got offered more money in the counteroffer by Gary Condren than he got by Arizona State.
See, I heard different. California. I heard he got offered less. I heard he got offered less, but over a long period of time, the number was $4 million. It came up.
Let me finish what I was saying.
Okay, well, I just want to tell you the difference.
Let me finish what I was saying, buddy.
Right.
He got offered $4 million here, which is more money than Arizona State, and Washington combined offered
right,
him.
I agree. Yeah.
You could multiply what they offered him times five, and you combine it and add for it times five or six, and you still don't come up with $4 million.
Yeah.
So if he really wanted to be a Gator, he would be a Gator right now. He didn't. He was in it for the money. And I don't give a damn what anybody else says. He was in it for the money. Now, does that change the fact that too many fingers, too many amateur fingers got involved in something that needed to be handled by professionals. No, it doesn't change that. And that's exactly what happened is when amateurs and egos combine, you get a conundrum.
Yeah, that depends on who you're talking to as to what the story is. The stories, and again, I'm not, did you read the Athletic story?
Yeah, I read it.
Okay.
The surface.
What did you think of it?
Totally skims the surface.
Well, that's all they got. But I mean, what else can you write? You don't have a smoking gun. And I will say that the difficulty is it's a brand new system. Nobody knows who's in charge. And they didn't know how to deal with some of the things like large sums of money. And there was pressure to get good recruits. And they messed it up. That won't be the only school to do this, by the way. This will happen to a lot more people. It's new rules. So the quotes I got from my source, who are close to Gator Collective, is he said, "We wanted to do the right thing." Okay. Florida should have been behind the Gator Collective sooner. That's number two. Says we can't tell the whole story right now, and then the people at Gator Collective says what a shame it was that they had to duck out of the story of the Gator Collective after starting it and getting 150 athletes. So that's their side. There's other sides to be had. I don't know. I don't have time to devote to it. That's just a little piece I've gotten. And Brendan, you got a little piece. You have talked to people who think the wrong people are doing this. There are other people who are, somebody say, old money people who think maybe that they went got the wrong people and the Gator Collective wasn't ready. Anyway.
Well, I think that's, okay. Well, you're going to allude, I mean, I'm not, yeah, we're definitely working on a story like anybody else is, but our angle is, and what I've heard, and I know I've heard, I think the other side, you know, of the story, which is, you know, more of the Gator Collective might have been, you know, more of the misfire and part of the problem. And, you know, and look, I'm just a messenger. I'm not taking,
we
I don't take sides.
And
I
don't, we don't,
I'm
we
not
don't
getting into that, but I'm just saying, and I don't have an opinion because it's just sort of new, but I've definitely heard that it was the collective's perspective where the breakdown was there. And that potentially,
so the people you talked to were blaming on the collective.
Yeah, because it's sort of this three sort of headed monster, right? So you've got the UAA, and then you've now, which is always weird when we even had that to begin with. So you have the UAA, and then you have the collective, right? And then there's sort of these rules with each one of them, right? And the collective sort of steps into a huge responsibility and a process that has sort of not been exactly. You know, the process of getting recruits in the past has not been the same. That's basically what I'm trying to say. So these sort of connections to the past are very, seemingly disapproved with, the collective's, way of losing, say, potential a five-star athlete. So there's frustration amongst like a groundswell, which has sort of been the two-sided, part of this, which I think, is normal, which is a booster sort of, pseudo situation. And, you see, and multiple sources, I think there's just a lot of storyline that's definitely running down there. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of different stories and people coming out, because there's definitely a lot of people still interested in it, because I'm not the one keeping the story alive. You're not the one keeping the story. These things are showing up, this morning, and you're like, here we go again. So, we're sort of forced to talk about it in that aspect. And
France, let's see, where do you come down on this?
Where I come down on it is the same place I've been coming down on for the last 10 days, which is...
But you can't blame the kid. It's not just his fault. It's not... You can't...
I don't blame the kid.
He can blame whoever he wants. I mean, it's not...
All I can say about the kid is if he wanted to be a Gator, he would have been a Gator, because Florida still offered him more money than he could have gotten any place else. That's a fact. Nobody else. Jacob Rudner of 24/7 Sports, who's an Arizona State grad and very care And those Kenny Dillingham, the new coach there, very well, says he didn't get a dime from Arizona State.
No, he didn't. Barely.
So at any rate, if he wanted to be a Gator, he would have been a Gator. You know, that's just the way it is. So I'm not blaming him. Everybody's got to do what they got to do. My point being is this. You got amateur, and I'm sticking with it. Amateurs and egos collided.
But where do you get, how do you develop that whole system that fast? Why was Florida so late on the uptake of bringing the money people together? Why didn't they have the constituency lined up with a plan? Because clearly the University of Florida was somewhat complicit because they didn't have the people. They thought their sugar daddy was Hugh Hathcock. And Hathcock didn't have the money. And then Gator Collective pulled the plug and so what have you. So the question is, why were those so late getting it done?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that went wrong in there. I mean, first off, why did the collective go all for $13.8 million? I mean, nope, you know.
Look, well, it was brought, here's the word. They say they were brought that deal by the University of Florida.
I don't believe that.
Okay.
I don't believe that for one second.
Well, the person just told me that Hugh Cathcock said, I got you. And the University of Florida people brought it to them and said, okay, here it is. Now, I don't know what the real story is. That's what I was told.
Well, I've been told totally different on that. Completely different
That's
on
what
that.
I was told.
And
what?
Same thing.
Me, what I yeah. said? Yeah. Okay, I can tell you that the source I got it from, I know he's covering his own tail, but he was involved in the deal. So he knows a little bit about it. Brendan, what do you say for your source? What can you say about it?
Solid, because it's a different perspective.
Well, do you hear the same thing from your source?
Yes, I hear the same. Yes, okay. I do. There's no reason to reiterate it. But
we got different sources. Francis got one that says that was part of the deal.
Mine says that Hugh Hathcock was the ringleader of this whole thing. And Hugh Hathcock brought it to Florida.
Well, he was the guy. This is direct quote, basically, that Hugh Hathcock was getting ready to sell one of his properties, and he said basically he has to get prepared to make a generous offer. That's what this source told me. Now, I don't know that. That's what they said.
And then I heard a part of that is that he couldn't hit the February deadline for the check.
Right.
And so because of that.
The Gator Collective pulled the plug on.
Right. And the check wasn't $13 million. You know, it was the $500,000 down payment, signing bonus is what they're actually calling it. And $125,000 of that, you know, was either paid. And this is when the story at The Athletic was either paid or not. And you know, that's sort of, I don't know, probably what's in question, but I'm sure there's no reports of this, you know, any foul play or anything, I think. It's just, these are the kind of messy things that are, you know, in place now in college football. And, like, this is what we deal with. So, I just, you know, we're certainly hearing and seeing those growing pains, but, you know, I think that it's been misrepresented in a lot of sense of this $13 million price tag. Yeah. That's what I heard. It's like really more like $6.5 million. Yeah. And, you know, and that was over 4 years, and there was a performance kick in there. And there was a renegotiation after 3 years.
The numbers are all the Athletic story.
I know, but I'm just saying that's what we all know. So it's like these kind of things become a collaboration. I think in the end, everybody wants to kind of let it go. But, I reiterate, we're not the ones talking about it.
My guy says he's ready to get rid of it, too. I think probably Franz is as well.
Well, then
he wants to talk more basketball.
It continuously shows up in our life in, you know, the last 2 days, and we're both sort of it. Anyway, I'm done. That's it. That's all I got for you.
Okay. Natalie Locke says, I'm sorry, but the kid wasn't worth it. I don't think anybody would thought he was worth it.
No, he's not worth it.
Was never the idea, but that's what the price tag was.
I mean, give me a break. Take a risk like that. I mean, that's a flyer of flyers. And I think, and I'll just say this, I think what we're probably see in this process is that we can't just potentially let millionaires step in and just, like, you know, say they're going to write checks for, you know, $5, $6, $7, $8, $13 million for one player.
Wins.
My God, for one player. Yeah, that, so.
It's got to be some kind of system so setting a price. All right, Francis, in the remaining time we got here, I want to talk a little bit about this basketball team. We kind of broke our hearts in Lexington.
I'm not happy.
After a tremendous win over the number two team in the nation. And now they're back to square one. You call the shot. About them, the big win they had over the number two team in the nation, Tennessee. But you were disappointed in what you saw in the game on Saturday night, right?
Well, here's what I was disappointed with. They had plays that they could have made and won the game. You know, it comes down to the fact that you cannot have a situation, for example, and I hate to point a finger, but Myron Jones, if he gives the ball back to Colin Castleton, Colin Castleton then has three options to shoot a three-pointer to win the game that would have been far better than the one that Myron Jones shot. Myron Jones shot his three with 11 seconds left on the shot clock. If he gets the ball to Castleton, Castleton can whip the ball. You're talking about 3 seconds go off the clock. He's still got 8 seconds left on the shot clock. But you would have had three different options that were better prepared to shoot the three than the one that took it. But that's just one play. Again, one play, it should not have come down to there. If Florida makes the plays, the Jason Wallace three-pointer, the layup by Sevier Wheeler after a missed three-pointer and the ball taps back out to him, and nobody bothers to get into the lane. I got to tell you, I think Todd was disappointed in some of the. I'm hearing all kinds of whispering here.
We're not whispering. We're not saying words.
No, I'm trying to fix this thing because he's getting.
Not whispering. He's not whispering anything.
I was trying to get your name right, Franz, and it was a flying all over the place. I'm sorry.
What I think Todd was disappointed in, more so than the missed shots, and the Gators missed several shots, but I think he was disappointed that they did not make winning plays. A winning play would have been there at the end, get the ball to Castleton, get the ball to somebody who is an open shooter. That's a winning play. Then it's a matter of faith. Maybe the shot goes in, maybe it doesn't. But the winning play is to get the ball to the shooter, to the right shooter. That's a winning play. A winning play is somebody stepping in and stopping Sevier Wheeler from driving in there and getting 2 points.
Uncontested layup.
And uncontested layup. At a point in time where all of a sudden they go up by 8 on that play. Oh my gosh. This is how much it's a case of you've got to make winning plays. They didn't do it. Colin Castleton was an absolute warrior.
25 points. All I gotta say,
look at what he did, and he destroyed Oscar Tshiebwe.
He did.
Last year's number one player in the country, mm-hmm. the top rebounder in the country, whatever. He ate him alive, destroyed him.
They got it down to 2 points at the end there with a chance, and then they just fell asleep.
Wah, wah.
And it's growing pains, but here's the thing that I see that is going to be the issue down the stretch. They don't have another rebounder other than Colin Castle.
Jatobo can't play or what? Can't Jatobo play?
Jatobo got in there, but he is not a rebounder. And he's not a really quick defensive guy.
Yeah, Fudge is pretty good.
But Fudge again, not a particularly great rebounder. He needs a rebounder. Fudge has tremendous potential, but he's a small forward in a 6'10" body. problem. Kwesi Reeves, another problem. Kid that can is the most athletic player on the team, who needs to take the ball, put it on the deck, go to the rack, get fouled, because he can make free throws all day long.
Shooting too many threes right now.
That's what you do.
Streaky shooter.
You're always pushing it up from the arc.
The thing that I'm very impressed with, Oates Castleton, I'm impressed with the way that Kyle Lofton has really the last few ball games. Kyle Lofton's been an absolute. He's playing like we thought we were going to, the point guard we were going to get.
Mm-hmm.
He had 14 points in that ball game, 4 assists, 4 rebounds. Played very, very well in that game.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, Francis, take us home with your final thoughts on the Gator team, where they go from here, and what you see ahead for them. Do they make the tournament or not? While we get this Monday's law off its head.
They're 13-10 right now. They've got Alabama coming up, which is a game that can be won. Going to be very difficult to do it in Tuscaloosa, but it can be won. Mississippi State just about beat them and should have beaten them. If they'd gotten a favorable call there at the end, would have beaten them in Tuscaloosa. So they're beatable there, but you got to really play well to do it. And it's on the road. Don't know if they'll shoot well enough, make enough threes to do it. Then you come up with a 7-game stretch to end the season. And this is where it's going to be, where the Gators are going to make it or break it. They got 7 games, 6 of which are very winnable. Even Arkansas on the road, I think, is a winnable game. Arkansas is not that good, not that consistent. Kentucky at home can be beaten. The other game, 5 games, very winnable. If Florida goes 6-1, they finish with 19 wins. They aren't going to make the tournament with 19 wins. They'd have to do something in the SEC tournament. They get to 20, they're going to get in, and you can count on that. But that's what it's going to take. They're going to need to go 7. If they don't beat Alabama, which I find difficult to believe they will, but it's doable, they're going to have to go 7-0 to make the tournament, without some help in the SEC tournament.
All right, Francis, good job as usual. Appreciate that. Have a good weekend. We'll be reading you soon and Gator Bait like we always do. And great job once again for uncovering it all. And we'll catch up to you later in the week. All right? Franz Beard. Great, Franz Beard. Thank you, buddy.
Bye, Franz.
Bye.
All right, so we're going to do our commercial here that we didn't get in.
I'm not in any commercials.
No, you're not.
Did you find my briefcase?
Yeah, I did. I want to find my commercial that pays the bills. These guys pay the bills. Thank you very much. Tighten our eyes.
Things have certainly got a little out of hand lately when it comes to just buying our everyday necessities. Just look at gas, streaming services, and heck, even chicken wings. Well, there is one necessity that shouldn't cost a ton. Taking care of yourself and helping fix all the aches and pains in life, and the fine folks at Titan MRI agree. With costs a fraction of what you'd pay at a hospital, you'll not only save money, you'll be taken care of by staff with over 20 years experience. So when you need an MRI, call Titan first, and you...
up the show, and then we're going to hear about Red Star Medical Research, our good friends. Brendan, you've been working today and trying to get to the bottom of the story.
For about really 3 days on the.
Exaggerating it now.
Not like that. I'm just saying it's been a part of the other duties of work, which is, getting through the end of this recruiting season. And, the crazy time we're supposed to be kind of getting at rest here. And certainly that is not what's sort of happening.
Yeah, it's not. Well, we have to. Here's the thing about it. We're a magazine, which is what we always were. And we are connected. We don't have the wheels and the firepower to cover sports 7 days a week. And it's hard when we get stretched out, right?
Well, we do pretty good.
I'm proud of our young reporters. They're doing great. Dan Bond's been absolutely fantastic.
I like to think that we sift through a lot of the stuff. Look, if you don't see us run to have the same story that's up, and this is not a sales pitch, it's really just because we don't really have the story you know, lock cold with a source or anything like that. You know, I think we always, you know, we pick and choose which stories I think are worth our time. It's like Vice News, right? You see what you're going to see. We're the Gator Vice News, maybe. That's what it is.
No, it is Vice News.
We just try to pick the stories that are relevant and, you know, we sift through some of the stuff we know is just not really going to be worth it.
Yeah.
You're not always right, but we have to react when things, you know, come our way. I'm not, necessarily one of the reporters. I do, obviously, a lot of the behind the scenes and everything else, but, you know, I think we all take turns because we wear so many hats getting information. And I think, you know, it's sort of just funny how it, you know, seems to fall in our lap over the years at certain times. And it's not advantageous to either one of us because it's not really fun to be the ones to go out and say, hey, you know, I'm hearing this, I'm hearing that. Because, you know, it's your reputation, but it's also your inbox, right? Because you're going to get so many people that, you know, want to, or maybe are or not connected, and it becomes emotionally connected to the story one way or another, either makes them mad or not mad to even talk about it. And you're going to hear, I think, sort of everyone's, but now that's part of what we do, and that's part of the job. But I think at the end of the day, I think, you know, what I'm seeing as a whole is that I think things definitely need to get, you know, tightened up as far as how this is going to work, because you got to have these athletes, you know. You got to bring in these players, right?
Yeah.
You have to have them. Whatever the rules are, you got to match. It's not a Rudy situation, no matter what coaching, how many coaches you have. It doesn't matter. We all, those who know college football know you have to recruit. Period, end of story, no question. Now, I'm wanting to actually say this, and no one's watching this, so it doesn't really matter. But you look at what's happening at Colorado, right? And I think, again, we're seeing
20
what?
People are watching.
Yeah. Oh, well, they don't care. So what we're seeing right now is that, okay, I grew up, and you were there for a long time, in Colorado. We watched the, I think they won the national championship.
Tied for it.
With McCartney. And, you know, so we saw, but that was a different time for college football, right? Mm-hmm. And a different time for recruiting, and we all know that, right? So now fast forward, here we are. It's like a city that grew too fast. Like, CU is not ready for, I think, the level to, you know, they're going to have to build all sorts of stuff for, you know, Dion as they go, right? And you have a situation, I think, which is like, you may recruit really well, but you've got to watch out for the transfer portal. Because, you know, end of the day, like, Folsom Field's not the Swamp. You know what I mean? And you know, and what happens when he starts losing? Because he, you know, what I know about overzealous winners is they're generally pretty bad losers. So, you know, is he going to stay there? He bailed pretty quickly from, Jackson.
No, he didn't. It was three years there. He was
but
there
sort of the exit is up for grabs.
Yeah,
it's
like, I think he did a good job there. I think you couldn't ask him. Anyway, I get your point.
I'm just saying.
That's true. Isn't that true of every coach, though?
Well, but I'm just saying, you let me finish. What I'm trying to draw, like, the comparison to is that, you know, the SEC is still going to be king. Now, there's some nice programs getting sort of back together in the Pac-12. Things are looking, you know, a little bit maybe of the day of old because of the transfer portal, and that's certainly changing the game, but or has or whatever. What I think, you know, we're these programs are going to either have to catch up or not. You're going to play at this field and you're not going to feel that feeling you had in the Swamp. You're not going to have the facility, the Hebner Center. You're not going to have all of the extras that you're going to have at Clemson and you're going to have at LSU, you know, all that stuff. I think in the end, they're still going to miss that because I know the infrastructure up in Boulder and it really is not ready.
Well,
and
Southern football's different.
And you have to deal with like the People's Republic of Boulder, which is a very conservative, well, I get liberal, but I call conservative liberal.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's part of the reason that Neuheisel got brought down up there. And, you know, for some of his recruiting antics, if you remember correctly. So I think, you know, I'm just drawing the comparison. I think these athletes will be like, oh, this was a great idea. He was a great promoter. But I'm going to jump in the transfer portal and head back down to Florida or go play, you know, at one of these other schools where I think, you know, the cream will still rise to the top. I think we'll see a little bit of a reset probably this first year, much like we're seeing, you know, right now with you know, how money is brought to the table. You know, a lot of this money has been dark money. A lot of this money has been hidden in the past, you know, let's be honest. And now we're seeing, you know, there's, you know, they still, do they wield power or not? Is this all part of it? Is these millionaires and Gator Guard, you know, all these different like subsets that are sort of showing up? I mean, the drama seems to continue to unfold right in front of our eyes. You know, you couldn't probably write this better on a TV series. It was the, from my lens, you know, because I have been definitely bombarded with, not bombarded, but a lot of information, It's hard to chase it all down.
Makes my head swim.
It's hard to chase it all down. It's hard to, you know, it's really a difficult, because you feel an obligation to say it, right? To, you know, and that's the thing. So I'm done.
I'm ready.
Have you seen my brief? Is it football season yet?
Yeah, it is. All right. I want to tell you about Renstar, our good friends who take care of us every week and do a terrific job in the community. Renstar Medical Research has been around for a while here. Since 1968, they've been doing these clinical studies, and they've done over 700 of them. They have this terrific facility, which was downtown, and you actually can be a part of the clinical studies if you find something that you like to be a part of. They're looking for solutions, and there are data that goes out to companies all over the world, and the pharmaceutical and biomedical data, and they will take it right here. And of course, one of the reasons we like to have local people is that it's indigenous to us, and they're looking for things they can, ways they can treat us better here in our communities. So you can take advantage of this place. They have a proven reputation as a high quality, patient centered clinical research facility, brings cutting edge clinical research trials to Ocala areas like Alzheimer's, psoriasis, osteoarthritis, migraine, fibromyalgia, and many other conditions that affect our community. Check it out today. Go to RenStar.net. You can find out whether you can qualify for one of their clinical research trials. RenStar Medical Research, seeking tomorrow's answers
to the health questions of today.
Thank you, RenStar. Thanks to our guest tonight. Sorry we missed Graham.
Thanks, Graham. You suck. Appreciate it.
And good to hear from Alan Taylor. And of course,
I missed him because I'm looking for my briefcase.
Yeah, well, you kind of announced it all over the country now by now, so we'll see.
Well, you know,
it's your dog, it's your briefcase, it's always something.
It's creative brain.